Hello, I'm Coral Snow. This is number 0538, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0538. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, science fiction writer Jeffrey A. Carver, author of The Reefs of Time and Crucible of Time, part of the Chaos Chronicles. Why did it take 11 years to finally continue his saga?
I was working on the book the entire time. It's not like I took 10 years off and then sat down to write the book. But this book just was particularly difficult for me to write for a variety of reasons. And then when I had written it, it was too long to be one volume. So I had to split it into two parts and publish it that way.
Andrew Cadell, principal partner for QIT Canada. How did this software company start?
We're living in a world of climate change, of changes in weather patterns and threats to individuals and to municipalities, especially around the world. And this software is something that was developed by my Australian partners who have a real going concern in Australia. They have about 60 clients. They started up this company with a software that dealt with road closures, sold a couple of them in Australia, decided to quit their jobs as municipal employees and start a company in the kitchen of the president and CEO.
Clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber on why Santa Claus needs therapy.
This guy's overweight. He's not a role model for anybody. He's a philanderer. He leaves his wife at home, goes around and makes out with everybody's mom. You know, we don't know how far that really goes either. So no wonder he needs all that milk and cookies for energy every time he lands. And then what's this jumping down these chimneys and things like this? I think he's a little delusional. Maybe he's got a little meth problem. That's why he can go all night long. I don't know. I'm really worried about him. I think he needs to go find himself a good therapist.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0538, was Coral Snow, a YouTuber who features beauty tips and makeup tips online. You can go to the website at thestufffile.com, check the show number for this program, which you just heard Coral mention, and you'll find the link to her YouTube page. Thank you very much, Coral, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show a bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Colorado man who was accused of smoking methamphetamine is now facing attempted murder charges after he was allegedly able to squeeze off two shots at Denver police officers from a gun that was hidden in his butt. 32-year-old Isaac Vigil was being brought into the police station after DPD officers repeatedly searched him when he somehow managed to open fire. Vigil stopped firing when his gun jammed and officers shot him in the stomach. Vigil was taken into custody after he was seen smoking meth in a McDonald's parking lot. He was facing numerous charges, including possession of drug paraphernalia, assault, felony menacing, and possession of a weapon. It was difficult to search Vigil because he was violent and aggressive and highly agitated, but officers reported that the suspect was patted down three times prior to the shooting. Vigil threatened to shoot the officers several times and claimed that he had been smoking meth for 3 days. In addition to the handgun, Vigil had two baggies of meth stashed in his rectal area. Wow, it's like a steamer trunk back there. You know, being able to shoot a gun out of your ass isn't exactly something that comes naturally to someone, unless you're a bull chasing Bugs Bunny. How often did he practice this? Also, how many pairs of pants do you go through with this kind of talent? Yeah. Anyway, 30-year-old Xiang Binsheng of Harbin, China, finally sought a doctor's attention after 3 months of struggling to breathe through his nose. Jiang told doctors at the Fourth Allied Hospital of Harbin Medical University that he couldn't sleep and also had a constant smell of decay in his nostrils. X-rays reveal Jiang had a tooth stuck in his nostril. The tooth, which Jiang had lost when he was just 10 years old after a fall from a third floor at a mall, had somehow rerooted and continued to grow in his nasal cavity. It was removed in a brief surgery, and Jiang is said to be recovering. Wow, that would have been a hard one to floss. Ooh. Kelly Elizabeth Carswell of Morganton, North Carolina, and her fiancé, Clarence Moore III, allegedly staged an elaborate crime all in the name of love. Around 10 p.m. on November 25th, while Carswell worked at the Big Daddy convenience store, Moore entered the store carrying an ornamental sword and wearing a hat and bandana to disguise his identity. He demanded money from Carswell, leaving with $2,960. When the robber left the store, she called 911. Police went on to work the case overnight while Carswell and Moore made an early morning stop at Walmart to buy a ring and get engaged on the spot, documenting the big event on Facebook, of course. But details of Carswell's story didn't add up, and investigators found evidence in her car and at their home that led them to arrest the couple. Moore confessed to the crime, but Carswell shouted at reporters as she entered the courthouse, "I will assault you. I didn't do it. Watch the bleeping video and you'll see I was bleeping terrified. I wasn't involved." The couple was charged with armed robbery, misuse of 911, and filing a false police report. So, based on her outburst to reporters, would it be safe to say that the engagement is off? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, that bell signifies that it's time once again for the Darwin File.
I am the Grim Reaper. I am death.
65-year-old Ronald Sear of Van Buren, Maine, became the victim of his own trap on Thanksgiving night on November 28th when he was shot by a handgun that he had rigged to fire whenever someone opened the front door. Sear was able to call 911 and say that he had been shot, but he later died. When officers of the Van Buren Police Department arrived, they found that along with the home's front door booby trap, other devices were set up, prompting them to call the Maine State Police Bomb Squad. Homemade security devices that use weapons are illegal in the United States. And you know, since he didn't die instantly and was able to call 911, then he had enough time before he left this mortal coil to appreciate the fact that his booby trap indeed worked. He would have also had enough time to reflect on the fact that the tree of life is often self-pruning.
I have come for you. I am death.
And let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Author Jeffrey A. Carver has just released the new two-part chapter in his series, The Chaos Chronicles. They are The Reefs of Time, which is Volume 5, and also Crucible of Time, which is Volume 6. Fans of his work have had to wait a while for the two-volume novel. This is his first new book in 11 years. Jeffrey joins us via Skype from Boston. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too, sir. First of all, I got to ask, why the 11-year wait?
Life, partly. And also, I was working on the book the entire time. It's not like I took 10 years off and then sat down to write the book. But this book just was particularly difficult for me to write for a variety of reasons. And then when I had written it, it was too long to be one volume. So I had to split it into two parts and publish it that way.
Well, let's go back to the beginning. When you first started the Chaos Chronicles, how much of a saga were you planning to make this? Was it just a one-off book that literally got away from you? Or were you planning on doing several volumes of this?
This was, in fact, my brainstorm was to write a long story spanning a number of short-ish novels. I had written a number of long books that took me a long time to write, and I tend to be a slow writer anyway. And after completing one that left me sort of tired and emotionally wrung out and realizing I can't keep doing this, how can I make this work? I need to write faster and get books out faster. So I had the brilliant idea of writing short, snappy novels that would create a long story arc. And to me, this was an epiphany. This was before we had long story arcs on television, so it wasn't something that was being done a lot, and I thought it would really work. My first book I wrote in a year, and the second book I wrote in a year, but it was getting a little bit longer. And the third book, a little bit longer than that, and they just kept growing. And then in the middle of the series, I detoured to write a book in a different universe, Eternity's End, which is not connected to this book. It's connected to my Starrigger universe. And that go ahead.
No, I was just about to ask, what is it? Does it change your writing style or the way you prepare to write when you know it's part of a series as opposed to a one-off? Does it change how you plot the story and how you proceed in writing it?
Well, yes and no. I am not a big outliner. I do outline in broad strokes what the story is, and I develop the details of the plot as I go. I don't know what the story is until I'm writing it. So I knew in general where the arc was going, and to go from book to book proved to be a little trickier than I thought, because I landed at the end of the first book, I landed my protagonist in a really weird place, and I knew it was going to be an adventure for him, but I didn't know any of the details of the adventure. Well, I knew some of the details, but not enough to really sketch it out. So there I am with a blank slate again. I'm still part of the same story, but I'm facing a blank slate for this particular book. And that happened each stage along the way. And each book in the series is set in a different kind of world. The third book is in an undersea adventure on an alien planet. And the fourth book takes us into the Orion Nebula, where supernovas are happening. And so it gives me a lot of variation, much more than in an individual novel, but a lot of challenges too.
Well, tell us about the story that is contained in the Chaos Chronicles.
Okay, well, it's a story of a man on a involuntary quest. He and a group of people he becomes associated with. He starts out in the solar system, but it soon is a galactic sort of thing. He and his alien compatriots are being thrown into situations where worlds are in jeopardy for various reasons, and they're being asked to help out. They're not being asked so much as being volunteered for the job. There are worlds to be saved, and they have been volunteered to do it. So they are reluctant heroes who find themselves having to establish relationships with beings and cultures that are completely foreign to them, and sometimes with them being perceived as possible hostile intruders at first. It's really a story about their relationships with each other and their relationships with these the peoples of these other worlds, and in some cases how peace can be made where there's war, and in other cases how they can successfully confront really cosmic level events that seem beyond the scope of humanity.
When you're writing science fiction like this, are you one of those science fiction writers who just have a vivid imagination of what the future or what the other worlds can offer? Or is it really a social commentary of what is going on in our times here?
I think more the former. I grew up reading science fiction and just loving the different worlds that I got to live in while I read these books. And I wanted to write newer and better versions of those stories. So I think if you look beneath the surface of my books, you will see some commentary about life as a human. Not so much social commentary about the social issues of our time. I think other writers do that more directly than I do. But about what it is to be human and what it is, what human means when you have sentient AIs and you have sentient creatures from other worlds, and what our sort of common humanity is. Humanity isn't the right word, but we don't have the right word right now.
As a science fiction writer, do you put any limitations on yourself as to what your characters or what the world you're creating can or cannot do? Because it's all part of your imagination. What types of things do you limit yourself with, if anything, that can't take place in the worlds you create?
Well, that's a really good question, because I have some really kind of out at the edge things happening in my worlds, but at the same time, I try really hard to make them plausible in a logical and scientific terms. Well, when I say scientific, I don't mean conforming to the science as we know it in this year, but plausible extensions, plausible in my mind anyway. For example, in my underwater story, I have a fair amount of experience as a scuba diver and some knowledge of what the undersea environment is like. And I tried to take all of that into account to make it so that somebody who really works and lives under the sea would say, oh yeah, that feels realistic. So I do set my own constraints, but I try to respect those once I have them.
The current books, as I mentioned, The Reefs of Time, which is Volume 5, and Crucible of Time, which is Volume 6, are out. Is this still a continuation of the Chaos Chronicles, or do you see yourself going on beyond these two books?
Well, I have one more book planned in the series called Masters of Shipworld, and that's just in the early stages of writing right now. And as I see things now, that will bring this series to a conclusion. There are many people have pointed out to me that I have set up possibilities of spin-off stories of other characters and things like that. I'm not really sure what I'll do after that. I have another universe called the Starrigger universe that I enjoy a lot, and there are completely unrelated books that I might want to write.
What about the possibility of having this on either the big or small screen? Have you given thought to that?
Oh, I'd love to see it happen. I think it's a natural. I think it'd be some challenges, because there's a great deal of internal. There's a character named Charlie who is an alien Quarks, and he lives in the mind of John Bandicoot, our human hero. And it'd be interesting to see how a filmmaker could bring Charlie to life, because you never see him or her. He dies periodically and is reborn, sometimes as a different gender, but always in his head. And but the story, I think, would really adapt very nicely to, oh, let's say, a Game of Thrones series kind of thing.
Well, you know,
if we're going to think big, let's think big.
I was thinking of that because everyone is talking about how they're waiting for Martin to write more, and I was thinking of that 10-year gap for you.
Yeah. That has not escaped me.
The series is called the Chaos Chronicles. The current books are The Reefs of Time and also The Crucible of Time. I thank you very much, Jeffrey, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it greatly.
Author Jeffrey A. Carver. Again, his series is The Chaos Chronicles. The latest two volumes are The Reefs of Time and Crucible of Time. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0538, and you'll find links to Jeffrey's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his books directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. This is the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about a special disaster software for municipalities. Plus, Dr. John Huber is in, seeking therapy for Santa Claus. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and also can be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, as Stephanie Ligua of Milton, Massachusetts, and her neighbor Wenhan Huang chatted in Huang's yard on December the 1st, an unusual object slammed to the ground just feet from where they stood. Their backs were turned when what looked like a giant silver tarp crashed down. On its way, it lopped off four tree branches. If it had hit us, we would have been dead, Stephanie said. Turns out the object was an uninflated silver evacuation slide from a Delta flight arriving in Boston from Paris. The Federal Aviation Administration confirmed that the pilot had heard a loud noise as the Boeing airliner approached Logan International Airport, but the flight landed without incident. Delta and the FAA are investigating. Well, we can rule out Santa. It's just too early for him this time of year. And remember when Delta's logo was, "You'll love the way we fly"? Apparently, they weren't talking about anybody on the ground. In Bainbridge Township, Ohio, a 60-year-old man called police on October 22nd after firing two warning shots into his backyard. The unnamed man told officers he was trying to scare an animal away, but when asked if it might have been a bear, he said, "Ain't no bear because it was jiggling my doorknob." Wait a minute. Bears can jiggle doorknobs. They just can't turn them because they have no opposable thumb. Anyway. The homeowner went on to tell police the animal had to be Bigfoot because it was 7 feet tall and it comes to his home every night because neighbors feed it bananas. Okay, so why doesn't it just go to the neighbor's house? Anyway, he also speculated that a woman who was missing from the area was taken by the creature. However, officers found no large animal tracks in his yard and suggested he call again if he witnesses anything suspicious. Wow, have the police thought of checking his basement to see if the missing woman might be down there, or if he had several bushels of bananas? Have they also considered taking his gun away? Just a thought. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority, which among other things runs New York's Metro North Suburban Railroad, maintains a system of help point intercoms. It was through this system that authorities got a call as rush hour was approaching. There were suspicious packages at the Metro North station in New Rochelle. The boxes were man height and narrow, and it's not clear, but the caller may have thought that there were wires on them. They did have packaging ties. For a little while, an area of the station was closed, but the disruption was minimal, and the police eventually took away the boxes. What the boxes had contained, however, was allowed to remain. More help point intercoms, which will come in handy when even more suspicious-looking help point intercoms arrive. Talk about irony. At least authorities have to be confident that when all the units are installed, people will clearly understand how to use them. And a man was seen spinning his tires on his pickup truck outside an Ortonville, Michigan gas station. Surveillance video shows the truck hit the gas pump island, then crashed into the store. The driver can be seen grabbing some papers from inside the truck, removing the license plate, and running away from the scene. An employee inside the station recognized the man as 24-year-old regular customer William Edmonds and gave police a full description. Officers located and arrested Edmonds, who allegedly admitted to drinking beer and burning out because it was easy with his new tires. Police say he said he didn't mean to hit the building and ripped off his license plate because he got scared after the crash. Edmonds was charged with reckless driving and leaving the scene of an accident. Yeah, because without a license plate, police would have no way of figuring out who owned the vehicle, huh? Couldn't peel the VIN number off all the spots it's on the car? Just asking. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, an unnamed man was detained in Russia on November 28th after it was revealed that he had erected a fake border station in the woods near the country's border with Finland and charged four South Asian men to smuggle them into the European Union. He charged the men more than $10,000 for the service, but the man never planned to carry out his promises. Instead, he took the migrants on a circuitous route in the Vyborg region by car and on foot, and at one point carrying an inflatable boat, just in case. All five men were taken into custody. The smuggler may be charged with fraud. Although it is Russia, it might just give him the Entrepreneurial Spirit Award. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? A couple of weeks ago, I had Andrew Cadell do one of the opening guest slates of the Stuff File program. I mentioned that he was the principal partner at QIT Canada and that their Guardian software suite provides intuitive disaster management software and incident management solutions. But what exactly does that mean? It's an interesting software suite, and I thought we could have Andrew on the program to talk about it, so he joins us via Skype from Kamouraska, Quebec. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Peter. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, too. So what exactly is it that I just explained in the intro when I mentioned QIT Canada and their Guardian software? What is it?
Well, it's pretty basic. We're living in a world of climate change, of threats to weather changes in weather patterns and threats to individuals and to municipalities, especially around the world. And this software is something that was developed by my Australian partners, who have a real going concern in Australia. They have about 60 clients, and they make pretty good money doing it. They started up this company with a software that dealt with road closures. And sold a couple of them in Australia, decided to quit their jobs as municipal employees and start a company in the kitchen of the president and CEO. And 12 years later, they're doing very well. And they decided to partner with me and my Canadian partner in Canada. And so we're a subsidiary of QIT Plus in Australia. And so far, we're doing quite well. We've got a few clients about to sign up with a client in New Brunswick for the 1st of January, and we expect to have more in British Columbia and also in Atlantic Canada.
So it's sort of like a warning device for various climactic situations that might affect a municipality. Is that basically what we're talking about here?
Yeah, well, there are three elements. One is a great big screen that's direct to web that allows municipalities to operate everything from soup to nuts. So everything from ambulances to fire to police to snowplows to monitoring the water levels on their rivers to what have you, and allows them to coordinate all their operations, which, believe it or not, really does not exist in this day and age. There are some softwares that do that, but they don't do it all that well. Then the second part of it is an app that connects with the system so that anybody who's a municipal employee who has a smartphone can connect with the center of the operation, and they can be tracked, and people will know where they are, what they're doing, and tasks can be sent out to them in the field. And then the third part of it, which we call the tip of the iceberg, which is sort of the sexy part, is a dashboard which provides the public with full information on what's going on, especially in emergencies, from everything from floods and fires to where evacuation centers are, to lost pets, to weather radar, to school closures and airport landing times, everything that you really need to know. There's about 28, 29 points of information on this public dashboard. But in emergencies, for example, there was a cyclone recently, a flooding incident in a place called Townsville, which is a city of 170,000 people in Queensland in Australia. They had a 4.5 million hits on their dashboard in 3 days during an emergency there, which shows how much the public is tuned in and plugged in and is aware of how this thing can keep them up to date.
Okay, well, let's look at it from a practical point of view in a real-life situation, hypothetically. A couple of years ago, as you know, we had some major fires out west when it comes to wildfires. And some places were decimated because of that. Having a system like this, it's an early warning kind of situation, and it's one that gets that information. So if we were to go back to the Fort McMurray situation, how would this have applied or could have been applied?
Well, yeah, I don't want to second guess the people there, but what would have happened in that case and what happens in Australia right now is that, first of all, there would have been an immediate report that there was a fire, and that from 911, obviously, or from local people. That would have gone into the system, and everybody would have been aware from in all the municipal operations that there was a threat of fire. The first thing they would do is they would isolate where the fire was. They could calculate with the wind speeds what the possibilities were. They could identify neighborhoods by putting out a polygon or a square on the map, what neighborhoods would be affected and what needed probably to be evacuated. They would be able to give set up a center that would indicate immediate response, and then it would be able to provide what routes for evacuation would be required. Now that would be on the big board, and the all the material and the human resources would be applied to the fire immediately. But everyone would be aware within the municipal operation that's what they were doing. So it wouldn't be an exclusion to everybody else that's involved on the municipal level, whether it's ambulances or whether it's city trucks or whatever, and the municipal authorities would know. And then, and this would be in real time, you don't have to call up, I don't know, Sally at communications and say, hey, can you put this on the town website? In real time, it would be up on the dashboard, and everybody in that community would be aware that there was a fire and there was a threat, and that they should be considering the possibility of evacuating. But routes would be provided for evacuation. They'd be told where the evacuation centers were, whether they should go north or south, east or west, and areas to avoid, because there'd be a big polygon or a square on the map saying, don't go near this area. So that's essentially, in a nutshell, what would have happened. And it could have been done in a much more orderly way, and it would have allowed people to know what direction the fire was going and what areas they should avoid, because there were people that were driving through along roads beside the fire, and of course it whipped up very quickly. There would have been a much quicker response, I think, and things would have been better coordinated, as well as there would be a public information component.
So in other words, we have a situation in all levels of government, no matter whether it's municipal, federal, or provincial, where sometimes the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. Having software like this, everybody knows what's happening in real time and can therefore go to where or put the resources to where it's needed at that moment.
Exactly. I mean, we always talk in government about there being silos, that everybody works in silos. Well, when everybody's on the big screen, and the screen being a direct-to-web screen, so you can access it on your computer at home if you're an municipal employee, or you could be in an emergency center and looking at the same screen, you know what's going on. And at the same time, the public is made aware, as long as there's transparency, because you have to push a button to make sure that people will know that this is happening. Because, you know, if it were something that were very, very delicate, say a drug bust or something that was where the police didn't necessarily want to know, let everybody know what was going on, that would be something that would be kept to the police alone. But if it's something that the public should know, then immediately in real time, you put it up on the screen and you make sure that all the information is there. And people know that they can trust it. And I'll give you one example in where actually the internet can be a bit of a problem. There were on the system, the dashboard system, the emergency system, the Guardian system in Australia a few years ago, there was a cyclone that came through, and the all the routes that were shown were the routes that were feasible, but there were bridges that were washed out, and somebody followed Google Maps and went over a bridge that was washed out, and five people died. And so you have to be confident that the information that you're looking at is up to date and is trustworthy.
And primarily, this is something that you're selling to municipalities as opposed to the general population. Is that right?
Well, that's right, because the municipalities are the ones that are responsible for emergencies, although we'll probably look into talking to provinces and to regional governments, because they also have a huge responsibility in managing disasters. But this isn't just for disasters. It's also for day-to-day. For example, in the Australian public dashboards, you can see where there are roadworks, because the works people have put up some information as to where they might be putting in a manhole or you know, digging up the road. So they want the public to know, so they put it up on the dashboard. So that sort of thing can be put up. And there, you know, if there's a fire in your within your general vicinity, let's say within 100 kilometers, it'll be up there too. So you know if you're traveling that you need to avoid that area.
And if people want more information, and more importantly, if government officials or municipalities want more information, they can go to your website, which is qitcanada.com?
That's right.
Andrew, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Peter. It's The Stuff File is a great show.
Thank you. That's Andrew Cadell, the principal partner at QIT Canada. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0538, and you'll find links to their site. Plus, you'll also find a link to a promotional video that will give you a more visual representation of their software in just 60 seconds, and it'll tell you what it's all about. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, coming to you from Montreal, Canada, where we share the longest unprotected border in the world with the United States. Take that as a sign of extreme friendship or a warning.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about getting therapy for Santa. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way, and much more Stuff File news here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and also on Spotify. Okay, we got more stuff here for you. Now, sure, there are probably plenty of stolen goods for sale on Facebook Marketplace, but according to authorities in Oklahoma City, 36-year-old Vicky Treister went big. She's been charged with stealing a metal garage and posting it for sale for $1,500. Coincidentally, the original owner was browsing Marketplace when he saw Treister's ad, which included photos of two people taking apart his building. And he then notified police. Treister changed her story several times when questioned by police about how she came to own the building, according to court documents. She was charged with grand larceny. Wow. I can't decide whether that's the ultimate in chutzpah or just plain dumb. I mean, that takes some nerve, don't you think? Yeah. And the football team from Cardinal Ritter College Prep High School in St. Louis, Missouri, was penalized for having an ineligible player on the field during their season opener in Chicago, Illinois. The penalty was announced 2 days after the game against the player wearing number 24, shown on the roster as freshman Marvin Burks. Photographs of the game showed that Burks had the same unique identifying tattoos on his arm as junior running back Bill Jackson, who normally wears number 4. Jackson had been ejected from the state championship game the year before and still had a 1-game suspension to serve. Cardinal Ritter president Tomiko Armstead said the football team was suspended for the rest of the year and forfeited the 7 games they had already played. The coaching staff was permanently released from Cardinal Ritter College Prep, and athletic director Preston Thomas, who had served the school for nearly 20 years and led the team to 3 state championships, has made the decision to retire. Armstead said the internal investigation is still ongoing. I wonder if the number 24 will be permanently retired. You know, there are some coaches in sports who still believe in the old adage of, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? It's Santa's busiest time of the year. But perhaps what jolly old St. Nick really needs is therapy. I mean, this is a guy who sees you when you're sleeping, is very judgmental with his naughty or nice list, and has been seen kissing mommy. Clearly, he needs help. For that, we bring in Dr. John Huber. He's a clinical forensic psychologist and the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, which is a nonprofit organization. He joins us once again on the line from Texas. Ho, 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 John.
Ho, 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 Peter. How are you doing today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So, you're going after Santa, huh?
Absolutely. You know, this guy's just kind of weirds me out. He hangs around all year long, works one day a year, and he gets all these accolades. And what do? We see him, here, little boy, here, little girl, come sit on my lap. It just kind of freaks me out.
And he gives out candy.
And he gives out candy and the promise of presents if you come sit on my lap, you know. And that's just kind of weird. I think he's really in violating some major child labor laws. I mean, these aren't really elves. Come on, they're a bunch of little kids. And he's got them, you know, in this grinding mill making all these toys. And, you know, I think it's just a ploy. I'm going to give you a present. You come sneak over here, and I'm going to abscond with you and take off. You'll be another employee of mine, quote unquote.
And we haven't even gotten to a worldwide B&E.
Absolutely not. And that's pretty crazy, too. But it just really, I think this guy's overweight. He's not a role model for anybody. He's a philanderer. He leaves his wife at home, goes around and makes out with everybody's mom. You know, we don't know how far that really goes either. So no wonder he needs all that milk and cookies for energy every time he lands. And then what's this jumping down these chimneys and things like this? I think he's a little delusional. Maybe he's got a little meth problem. That's why he can go all night long. I don't know. I'm really worried about him. I think he needs to go find himself a good therapist and start working on making himself better and just be better than he was yesterday. That's all I'm asking.
Okay, so as a therapist, I got to ask, if he showed up on your couch, where would you begin?
Oh, wow. I would start with his commitment to his wife. You know, I mean, really, he runs around and makes out with all those women. Let's start right there, because that's just breaking up his core family right there. And if you don't have family, it's really hard to dig yourself out of other situations. So I would start there with his relationship with his wife, definitely.
Okay. Do you think, because, you know, we've talked in the past about therapy many times, do you think you can help this man?
You know, we've been doing lots of work recently with ketamine and ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, and I think that's the trick. He's a little delusional, so I think that ketamine experience, that shamanic experience we have with the ketamine would really benefit this guy. We get those ego defense mechanisms turned off and do some real therapy with him in a short amount of time. I think that's really the way to go with it.
Now, aren't you worried that if you, you know, I'm doing air quotes here, if you manage to cure Santa, that it will ruin Christmas for a lot of children? I mean, would he still be able to do what he does if he were cured?
Do we really need to have that today? I mean, you know, what is the whole meaning of holidays? Christmas time anyhow. It's about being together with people who you care about, who you love and care about you. It's families. It's not about what present you got. So, you know, I think it's time we kind of re-spun the story so that we get back to what it originally was supposed to be. And I think it might actually help the situation if we kind of got Santa to chill out just a little bit.
And you haven't even touched on animal abuse.
Yeah, those reindeer, you know, what's he giving those deer to get them to fly like that? And, you know, I know there's a lot of street drugs out there, and I hear all the time people thinking they're flying and stuff. Maybe there's something going on there. We need to get some veterinarians in there and do some assessments on these animals, make sure their chemistry's right, their blood chemistry, make sure they're not being put on any kind of substances that could be damaging to them in the long run. And really, you know, making those animals work that hard, that amount of time, that's such a short window to get them to go around the world like that. That's pretty taxing on them. No wonder they need the rest of the year to prepare for the next outing.
Now, aren't you concerned that you're going after such a public icon as Santa, that you're going to feel the wrath of children and their parents everywhere?
Well, I think once, you know, Santa comes out and tells everybody about his experience in therapy and how it's been so rewarding and beneficial for him, I think it's going to help shun this mysticism, this bad feeling we have about psychotherapy, and it's going to help break that barrier, get rid of the stigma, and now we will be in a much happier, better place because people will be much more willing to go get therapy and have it improve their life. So I think, you know, it's going to be hard at first. It's always darkest before the dawn. But I think when Santa comes out afterwards and explains where he's been to where he's going to be, I think the world will see and smile right along with him.
Well, since you're going after one of the biggest icons out there and putting, you know, your reputation on the line, as it were, why stop with Santa? Have you thought of maybe having a therapy session with God?
Well, I haven't met her yet, so that's part of that. You know, if I can get some time and sit down and you know, I'm sure there's something I could learn there too. You never know. I learned so much from my patients as it is. You know, we might go after a little bit of that narcissism, a little egoistic you know, boundaries there to try and, I don't know. You know, we have to look at functionality, and that's what we really look for with mental illness, is how are you able to function? Are you able to keep your job? Are you able to keep relationships with your family? I see Santa is on the verge of being fired. Like I said, he only works one day a year. His family problems are just astronomical with all these women that he's got on the side. You know, it's no wonder Mrs. Claus hasn't filed for divorce yet.
Well, the only reason I bring up God is because I have a concern with the order in which the Ten Commandments are in.
Oh, and that's your concern.
Yeah.
Okay, what?
Well, it's the fact that, you know, the first one is, you shall not have other gods before me, a bit narcissistic. Second one,
right.
You shall have no false idols, again, bit narcissistic. Third, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. That's three in a row. Four, keep the Sabbath day holy. That makes it five. Or four, rather. Five, honor your father and mother, which really brings it back to God. You only get to number six when he says, or she, as you're saying, you shall not commit murder. You'd think that would be higher up.
Well, you know, I think with that narcissism involved there, yeah, definitely. You know, you got to play it off, and it's not till number six. You're right. At least it made the top ten.
Okay, yes, at least it made the top ten. So getting back to Santa, if you feel Santa should be in therapy, do you feel Mrs. Claus should be in therapy?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think. What I'd like to do with her, she's probably got her own little problems, whether she's using illegal substances or drinking. We probably should do a substance abuse assessment on her just to rule that out or to address those problems that might be present. You know, I'm not going to say there is or isn't, but, you know, she's just not the same old girl she used to be. So I'm kind of worried about it.
And of the reindeer, who do you think needs more therapy, Rudolph or all those other bullying reindeer?
Well, you know, I have to give it to Rudolph. You know, you can't change other people. The only person you can change is yourself. You know, and when he figured that out, you know, he took pride in himself. And then all the other bullies kind of fell in line. And they were looking for a good leader. So, you know, I think we should affirm Rudolph and maybe work with him refining some of those leadership skills. And he can continue to lead by example. And, you know, I tell parents all the time that, you know, your kids don't hear what you say. They hear what you do. So he's a good example of that. You've got, you know, Donner and Blitzen, you know, and those were the bullies, but now they've kind of fallen in line and they're playing the part. They're not just talking about it now. They're actually following in line and they're being good communal reindeer. And I think that's because of Rudolph. So I think we should maybe get him in some therapy just to keep him grounded. Don't let him get too narcissistic, like, you know, we've been talking about here. And hopefully he can continue to demonstrate and lead by example.
Yes, Rudolph is the real winner here because, as you know, with him being the lead reindeer for all the other reindeers, the view is always the same.
Well, it reminds me of Adolf the Brown-Nosed Reindeer. He was just as fast as Rudolph, but he couldn't stop as fast.
And on that note, best of the holiday season to you. Thank you very much, John, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Dr. John Huber, Chairman for Mainstream Mental Health. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0538, and you'll find links to John's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. I've got one more Stuff File news story I want to share with you on the program, and that's this one. After being arrested three times in a month for allegedly stalking his ex-girlfriend, 29-year-old Ryan Kenneth Watt of Petaluma, California, was finally charged with that crime. As a condition of his release from jail, the judge issued a restraining order requiring him to stay away from and not even talk to the woman. But the woman later called police to complain that Watt was calling and texting her to try to get her to drop the charges. When officers caught up to Watt, he ran away from them across the freeway, said a police spokesman. How he didn't get hit, I don't know. Watt ran into the Petaluma Pumpkin Patch corn maze. Even with an assist from a helicopter, it took officers 2 hours to comb through the 4-acre maze until they finally found Watt and took him into custody. He is now charged with violating a restraining order, attempting to dissuade a victim of a crime, and resisting arrest. The judge set his bail at $250,000. Wow, the Petaluma Pumpkin Patch Corn Maze. Could you imagine people who were enjoying the maze and wondering why all the cops were there? Yeah. Anyway, boys and girls, it's that time of the program, the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
On November 29th, Jackson County, Kansas Sheriff Tim Morse reported that his office had arrested not one, but two McCrackens for two separate vehicle thefts. Around 1:30 a.m., a deputy stopped 36-year-old Eric Dean McCracken for a traffic infraction, then arrested him after learning that McCracken was driving with a suspended license. They always have a suspended license in these stories. Later that morning, the owner of the truck he was driving reported it stolen. Separately, just before 5 a.m. that day, the Shawnee County Sheriff's Office started tracking a different stolen truck using GPS. When a Holton, Kansas police officer tried to stop the truck, the driver, 32-year-old Keith Ray McCracken, fled. He eventually stopped the vehicle and tried to escape on foot, but was caught at a convenience store. Officers believe Keith was on his way to the Jackson County Jail to bail out his brother, Eric. Both were held at the jail on multiple charges. Now, while both brothers are deficient in the cranial capacity area, I'm only going to single out one of them, the younger brother, Keith. Why, oh why, would you steal a truck to go to the jail to pick up your older brother who was arrested for stealing a truck? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0538. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0538. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, I always screw it up.